Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. My next interview is with director and documentarian Sally Sussman. We talk about a very old film, well, I guess it's not that old for some of us, but premiered, in fact, at the Cannes Film Festival in 1978, a film by the name of Midnight Express. You may have heard of it, and the film we're talking about here is Midnight Return. We talk about the craziness that surrounded this film and the story behind it, the history, the fact that it was an artistic and a financial success, and as many have said, it became an indelible part of pop culture. But unfortunately, its lasting impact has been on the Turkish people. And we talk with some pretty fascinating people, directors, Oliver Stone included. In fact, this was one of his first major films where he wrote the script for it. We talk about how music is the really one of the key success factors in this film. We talk about the key being irony, and we talk about celebrity and justice, and about fact and truth, and about this notion of fake media, and justice and crime make it, and consequences, and how truth is stranger than fiction. This all makes it into the film. We talk about subjects include in the film Billy Hayes, who the film was about, Oliver Stone, Peter Guber, Alan Parker, David Putnam. I mean, these are serious Hollywood players. So you're gonna love this film. Sally's terrific. We had a great time chatting about so many different things. Midnight Return, the story of Billy Hayes and Turkey. Check it out and stay tuned for more interviews at facetofacelive.ca. You can check that out there. And if you want to get behind what I'm doing and support the work I'm involved in here at Face to Face, you can do that through patreon.com. Coming right up, Sally Sussman and Midnight Return. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by another very special guest here today. Sally Sussman is joining us from Toronto, although she's not really from Toronto currently, and we're going to find more about that. But anyway, Sally, let's get right to it. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
It's kind of fun. Can you tell us where you are right now currently and what you're doing?
Right now,
yeah.
I'm currently at the Royal Cinema in Toronto on College Street, at the third of the screening of our documentary, Midnight Return, the story of Billy Hayes in Turkey. The film has just started this evening, and while it plays, I'm talking to you.
How fun is that?
It's so fun.
How perfect is it that we're having the conversation about the film and some of the questions it raises and so on while it's playing in the background? I love it.
It's in the theater right now, and
yeah.
I have a bunch of friends who are sitting there watching it, but I don't tend to stay in the theater because, you know, I've seen it so many times, and after a while you go, you know what, I don't think I feel like seeing it. But it is, you know, I do watch the beginning just to see what kind of reaction people get, because we have a lot of humor in the beginning.
I bet. So you've been working on this film for several years now,
and a long time. I worked on this film in total from conception to finishing it for about 8 years, believe it or not.
Is that
well,
right?
There was some stops and starts.
Yeah, of course, sure.
Because of money, obviously, being the biggest issue when you do a film, or the lack thereof.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
So we had gone to Turkey and tried to raise some of the money independently to finish it, which was very, very difficult to do, even though people love the idea. They just don't want to write a check.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And so I just kind of thought, you know, I don't know if I can do this, if I can put this together, you know, because it wasn't my background. You know, I came out of the television business
right.
as a writer. So, you know, looking for money for movies was something completely, you know, out of my experience. So I had to put the film away really for like 5 years.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, because you pretty much, you directed this,
produced it with my husband. So what happened was then in like 2013, I realized, well, I had always hated the fact that it was unfinished, you know?
Right.
That was bugging me. But in 2013, at the end of 2012, beginning of 2013, Billy Hayes called me out of the blue because we really hadn't spoken for a while. And he said, you're not going to believe this. There's going to be a Midnight Express ballet being performed in London. And my husband, Tony Marina, said, you know, why don't you go shoot that?
Right.
And then, you know, and I did. And that's when I interviewed Alan Parker and David Putnam. And that particular trip really, really...
it kind of took you to the next level.
Took me to the next level.
Yeah, sure.
So I spent all of 2013 and 14 traveling the world, doing interviews, gathering material. And 2015, we edited, we put it all together, and then started submitting. And in 2016, we had our world premiere in Cannes. And now we're having our theatrical run. And then March, probably late March, we'll go on all the digital platforms.
Yeah,
that's
wonderful. And I haven't said it yet. Congratulations on the film. It's fascinating.
Thank you.
It's just
glad you enjoyed it.
Well, and it's such a crazy story for so many reasons. I mean, this has become a classic film. It's so many interesting filmmakers and producers and people involved. It's become a part of pop culture. Jokes have been made about it. The Simpsons and Seinfeld. It's quite remarkable and we're going to talk about Turkey as well, but what kind of pulled you in before we get into some of the issues about the film? Because to me, it's so not about what we watch on the screen, if that makes
sense. Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's about justice and facts and truth and so many things. But what was it that pulled you in? Was it the paradox of it all? The irony of it all?
No, I didn't. What happened was Midnight Express as a film, which I saw in college, terrified me and all my friends. And it was a movie that stuck with me. You know, and then it played on TV forever and ever. And it was one of those few films that really stuck with me. I could never get it out of my head, you know, because it was so scary. And it just, you know, it affected so many people.
Yeah.
And then years later, many, many years later, got married, meet my husband, and he tells me casually he's a director and producer. He's currently the supervising producer on The Young and the Restless, where he's been for the last 11 years. But he knew Billy Hayes from an acting class many years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So he knew the real Billy Hayes. So I met the real Billy Hayes, and he started to tell me the true story of his escape. So I casually, you know, knew Billy. So we happened to run into him, and I said to him, so what are you up to these days? What are you doing? And he said, you know, I've always wanted to go back to Turkey. I said, really? I said, wow, that's nervy. You know, I'm thinking the escaped convict wants to go back to the country. And I thought, but I said, that's a great irony. It's the 30th, you know, anniversary or so of Midnight Express. I knew the Turks hated the film. That I always knew. And I said, you know, this might make an interesting documentary. And that was the genesis of the project. And we had a sale immediately with financing and everything. But then Billy could not get a visa to go back to Turkey because he was persona non grata. The company, which happened to be a Canadian company, went out of business.
Oh, okay.
So ultimately, at the end of the day, my husband and I financed it and produced it ourselves.
Which is so often the case with passion projects and documentary film, right?
Yeah. You just have to bite the bullet and kind of, you know, do it yourself, because it's just such a tricky business, you know?
Did you have a sense when you went in that of the irony, of the deep ironies, of the dots that were, you know, that you were able to connect about, you know, things like truth-telling? And mm-hmm. I mean, in the age of you know, the fake news, I mean, it makes it so much more relevant. You know, I mean, there's at one point, I think it's Alan Parker, the director, who said, well, this was just a movie. But I mean, in truth, I mean, it's never just a movie.
Well, as you saw, the Turkish man who rebuts his comedy says, well, if somebody tells me this is just a movie, walk in my shoes. Because to them,
it
wasn't. But you had asked about the irony, you know, that is the key to the story. You have so many different levels of irony, because you have the convicted, you know, the drug smuggler who's hated by an entire country. You have the film, this enormous global phenomenon, yet vilified and hated in Turkey. You've got the drug smuggler's celebrity that he's desperate to hold on to and looking for ways to reclaim.
Right.
So I feel the tone of the film, I took a rather ironic tone with it, because I feel like there's so many different levels in the story that needed to be addressed, but when you see them, you realize just how ironic it is, you know, that here's the guy who was hated by Turkey, then he's being, you know, he escaped from Turkey for smuggling drugs, but the people who ultimately invite him back to Turkey are the police. I don't know if you could get any weirder.
Well, I don't know if you could get any weirder either. And the way the story ends with or at least this part of the story, I guess, the documented story, with the flag flying, and I thought they were going to kiss at one point there at the end, you know?
Well, you know, that particular event was the Turkish community's idea to invite Billy. That was completely their idea after they had seen his one-man show.
Right, okay.
And what was interesting about that is that a lot of Turkish Americans were very much against the idea of having Billy raise that flag.
Right.
Well, there were some people not happy about it.
Well, you, and that really comes out in the film. And I think we need a little bit of context, because I'm sure there's some people listening who haven't seen the film and don't know
the original,
know the story.
Or our film.
Yeah. Well, either really, right? And so the could be just because of the complexity of the story, and I think it might be worth just giving us a little bit of context around Billy.
Sure. I'd be happy to.
Yeah, because
our
of the political implications, and there's just so much, right?
Yeah, there's there were four. Our film tells the true story behind the iconic film Midnight Express. Midnight Express came out in 1978. It was Oliver Stone's first feature film, and it was Alan Parker's second feature film. All young people. David Putnam was a producer. I mean, you have a pedigree.
Yeah.
Giorgio Moroder did the music, which I think is very instrumental in the success of the film.
Interesting. Okay.
Anyway, that film, Midnight Express, told the true story of an American who had been busted for drugs in Turkey, sentenced to life for his crime, which was a ridiculous sentence, but ultimately escaped and pulled off an ingenious escape. When he returned home, he became an instant celebrity. He wrote a book, and the movie was made. The movie was a massive hit from day one, but it caused a political fallout in Turkey. The Turkish government tried to ban the film. In some countries, went along with the ban.
Right.
They protested. They vilified Billy Hayes, Oliver Stone. And the film itself was a very brutal depiction of Turkey and Turks in general. And Billy always felt, Billy Hayes, the real one, unfortunately the actor who portrayed him in the original film passed away in 1991.
Oh, that would have been interesting to have his
insights. It would have,
and
they were very close friends. They became very close friends. So we decided to do this documentary, which is telling the real story behind the film. In other words, even though the movie was based on a true story, many, many aspects of the film were not true. And the reason that it was important to examine those is the things that were not true in the film are the things that reverberated most back on Billy Hayes's life.
Interesting.
Yeah. One was the idea that he had killed a cop, killed a prison guard to escape, which was not true at all. And the other was that he had stood in a courtroom in Istanbul and called the Turkish nation a nation of pigs.
A nation of pigs, yeah.
Which he did not. That was all Oliver Stone's drama.
Which he then goes, when he finally does get back to Turkey, actually apologizes for that very specific scene.
Right.
In a media scrum. Yeah.
In the press conference in Istanbul, he apologized for that because he knows that that was the speech that caused the huge uproar. When the movie came out and the Turkish government saw the film, they issued an Interpol warrant for Billy Hayes that stuck for about 15 years.
Wow.
He was not allowed to leave the United States because if he traveled to certain countries with an extradition, he couldn't take the risk.
Right.
He could be sent back to Turkey.
Back to Turkey.
When he expresses a desire to go back to Turkey, he's thinking, well, the Interpol warrant is gone. Now there should be no problem with me going back. And then as our film shows, the Turks didn't want him to come back. He was persona non grata. He ultimately gets back to Turkey because he gets an invitation from the Turkish National Police to attend a conference on criminal justice. And that in itself was bizarre. So we went to Turkey. It was a 4-day whirlwind trip. And so in our documentary, what I was trying to do is to show three pillars of this particular story. One is the film itself, Midnight Express, with the original filmmakers, why they made the choices they did and how the fallout affected them.
Sure.
The other was the Turkish-American side, which is the side where they tell the world what it is about this film and why they hated it so, and shared some of their personal stories.
Sure,
and of course, the third pillar is Billy's outreach to Turkey and Billy's life.
Did you find that there were times, you must have, I would think, you know, somebody in the film, and I can't remember who it was, says, you know, you couldn't really tell when the embellishment began and the facts ended.
Exactly.
Did you ever find there were times as you were filming or interviewing, whatever, going, okay, this is just so not true. None of this is true. I don't believe any of this.
Yes, absolutely, because Billy has told his story millions of times.
Yeah.
He tells it in a one-man show.
Yeah.
But he's conflated certain events from the movie into his own story.
Into his story. Isn't that interesting?
And he even says in our documentary, I don't even know what it is anymore.
Right.
And because of the subject of memory, people, you know, view things somewhat differently sometimes as time goes on.
Sure, yeah.
I try to, when he tells the story of his escape, separated as much as I can with other sources, I know he ended up in Greece 100%, and I know he rowed from an island in a rowboat. If all the steps in between when he was in Istanbul, we know he dyed his hair because he had black hair when he came home. So his escape story is pretty accurate. I tried to find some holes, but there's no question that somebody who has the personality, who is willing to smuggle drugs from a foreign country, certainly has the ability to embellish. You know what I mean?
There's a built-in theatrical sensibility there. Oh, yeah, yeah, no, for sure. You know what's so interesting to me? I'm a huge Oliver Stone fan, and I thought it was wonderful that you got him for the film and that he was so candid about his script and about how it played out. And I also found it fascinating the relationship or the lack of thereof with David and Alan. Very interesting.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah. But he went on to make Natural Born Killers. And I remember the tagline from Natural Born Killers was in the media circus of life, they were the main attraction. I don't know if you've seen that film. But
I like Oliver's work, except that's the one film of his I can't get through.
Right.
It's every time I get to that restaurant scene
at the beginning,
I have to turn it off.
Yeah, it's difficult.
But I love Oliver's work. I think he's extremely talented. You know, again, though, he brings us, you know, I think when you see an Oliver Stone film, you got to know he brings an element of his personality and his
absolutely
views into his writing. It's just what he does.
What's so interesting about that is about this was about the cult of celebrity. I mean, Natural Born Killers is really it's for many a difficult film, and like you said, you can't get through it. But it's about celebrity. It's about fact. It's about fiction. It's kind of this crazy world that we find ourselves in today with social media and the fascination with the image, and it's all about how I look. It's all about me.
I always say to my son, you know, I grew up in what they called the me generation. I said, your generation is the me, look at me generation.
Right, right.
You know?
Do you think, Sally, do you think movies are ever just movies?
I think there's got to always be something personal in, not necessarily political.
Right.
But personal.
Something else going on, more going on than meets the eye.
I think so. Only because you've probably figured that most filmmakers, especially narrative filmmakers, you know, who are doing scripted work, they probably are spending years and years on these projects.
Right.
So it becomes very, very personal. I think in the doc world, there's a trap for filmmakers. I don't personally believe that a doc filmmaker should put themselves in their film.
Interesting. Okay.
That's just my style. I just don't like that style of film. Now, I've worked for Michael Moore, and he's great, you know. And I also don't think that doc filmmakers should editorialize. At least I didn't feel that way. I have a background in journalism, and I really try to approach this as a journalist, because I could have stacked the deck against Billy Hayes.
Right.
I could have made him look more pathetic, let's say.
Sure.
Or more troubled, or his family was more resentful of him. I could have made Oliver look like the bad guy. I could have made Alan Parker look like the bad guy for not apologizing. And I feel like, for me, I wanted to approach it objectively. I wanted the audience to come away and form their own impression.
Right. Here's what Stone said. Here's what Putnam said. I'll make my judgment call based on what I'm seeing.
Yeah, the audience is smart enough to come away with their own opinion. They don't need, you know, me to hit them over the head and tell them how to think. And I don't think that's a good idea.
So you want to keep as much emotion out of it as you can?
I think in the documentary space, yes.
Yeah.
Now, that would probably depend on how personal the subject matter is to the person. You know, like the story you were telling me of the man you interviewed. His was a personal doc about him. So that's a little bit different. But when you're looking at it as a third person, which is how I approached this, I came at, you know, this wasn't about me. It was about me observing these people.
Right.
I just felt objectivity was critical
here
because of the three sides to the story, let's say. Billy's side, the filmmaker's side, and the Turk's side.
Sure. For me, it's a real story about change, too, you know, and about history and looking back and, you know, connecting those dots and the fact that he's able to go back and that people are able to the Turkish. I mean, the fact that he was invited by the Turkish police is fascinating in and of itself.
Unbelievable. You know, it was so surreal.
Well, maybe, you know, coming to a conference on prison reform?
The Turkish National Police were hosting a conference on global security.
It's amazing.
And terrorism. This particular group of Turkish policemen specialized in anti-terrorism.
Right.
And they were all educated in the U.S. They were getting their PhDs in criminology. Brilliant young men, brilliant. And they had seen a video of Billy on YouTube where he had apologized, was expressing his regret at the way the Turks had been portrayed in the film.
Yeah.
So they invited him. And he called us and said, look, you're not going to believe this. I actually got this Turkish invite. And I told them that I'm coming with you, my husband and I, the filmmakers who are doing a documentary. The policemen didn't really know what to make of us.
Right.
And we ended up getting along great. Now, the saddest part of this story, which is very disturbing to us, in our film, you can see the Turkish policemen. Now, you don't see their faces up close. the main Turkish policeman who guarded us the entire time we were there, I mean, they didn't let Billy out of their sight for 1 minute. They are all in jail now.
Oh.
Because they were all arrested as suspected of being part of this coup that took place in Turkey last year.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say in connection to...
No. They have been purged from the one of the police captains.
Wow.
Who I knew well, who I stay in touch. I stay in touch with. We stayed in touch.
Wow.
One of them who I'm in touch with now wrote me recently and told me he had had his passport confiscated, his apartment ransacked. He took his wife and his daughter and escaped into Greece and asked for asylum in Greece. These guys have been so unfairly targeted. They were the most liberal, the most intelligent. And they just got caught up in this crazy political drama being played out in Turkey now. So they're in prison, and that is really upsetting for us because they were great people.
Well, I mean, and a tragic story, horrifying, really. And again, just showing you the craziness of this particular story, I think, and even the irony of just life in general, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the unexpected nature of what tomorrow might bring. Wow, that's really unsettling.
Very disturbing.
Maybe my next question is apropos. I was going to say, you know, this for me is a story about healing, do you really think time heals everything? Is that part of what
I think that for Billy Hayes, he got the healing he hoped. He was not hated by Turkish people anymore. Yes, of course, there are still some who doubt his sincerity. But I would say the vast majority of Turkish and probably people in Turkey, because the film is playing in Turkey, played there, view him very differently. You know, when you see those images on a big screen, and some characters, ostensibly Billy Hayes, is up there yelling, you know, I fuck your sons and your grandmothers and your daughters, and I hate your nation, and you're all pigs.
Yeah.
You know, that resonates. But when the real person tells you, look, that's not what I said, I didn't say anything close to that. And then you suddenly realize, you know, there is a real person under this mythology. Because, you see, he was a mythology in Turkey. The policemen who invited Billy back, the ones I was telling you who are in prison now, they weren't even born when the movie came
out. Right, of course not. Yeah, so they're living the legacy that is.
Yeah, but they knew the legacy.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, that
and they
comes
were
out
hoping
clearly
that
in the film.
Yeah, and they wanted to change the perception. So that particular time in Turkey in the late 2007, 2008 was a fabulous time. It was a golden time there. You know, it was opening up to the EU. You know, everything was, it was a beautiful city. We were treated beautifully. Ever since that time, things have really changed in Turkey significantly.
Right. Huh. Yeah, you've kind of captured a before and after.
Right before, in that moment.
Yeah, sure. What about, so, you know, Oliver Stone and Alan Parker certainly talk about it and touch on it. It comes out in various ways and in the film itself. But, I mean, to me, the film, your film, certainly has a lot to say about racism, has a lot to say about, maybe not about racism, but the assumptions that we make about others, Sally.
Yeah.
You know, and there's this great line from Alan where he says, it didn't even occur to us to have nice Turkish people in the film. Didn't even occur to us. Why would we bother doing that? You know?
But I think what Alan's point is, and he's saying that as young filmmakers at that time, we were telling a story about a guy in a horrible situation in order to make the audience sympathetic to his plight, which was a bad situation.
Oh, I can't even imagine. What a mess.
We need to create enough villains.
Right, yes.
Now,
yes.
The original script that Oliver wrote had a lot of lighter moments in it. It wasn't quite as heavy as the ultimate final product.
Right.
But Alan, you know, that was Alan's choice as a director. He made a magnificent film, one that's resonated for 35 years.
Well, I will never forget what you said. I mean, we're just to sort of come back full circle, the film for you really, really stuck with you. It was at
the
right place, right time, and I think one of the reporters in Cannes that you have appearing in the film talking about how, I mean, just really communicating that emotional sense that, wow, we've never seen anything like this.
Yeah, it was the most violent film ever played that has ever played at Cannes. And they were shocked. And Alan talks about the fact that he was accosted right away about this film, yet the audience loved it.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating?
And cheered it. So it's a very complex story that way in terms of how the film was played. I think if you were to make something like that today, you would be much more mindful.
Right, of course.
Of how the other people are being portrayed. You know, then, you know, I'm sure it was like, well, it's Turkey, so it's, you know, it's a hellhole in the prison. So, yeah, and I don't think there's a nice prison anywhere in the world.
Well, I think it's interesting. I think it has it does have some things to say about prison reform and what is justice and sentencing and just this war on drugs. I
mean, the war on drugs is a huge factor.
What does that even mean? You know,
and exactly, how and why was Nixon pressuring Turkey? And then the Turks, you know, were angry, so they took it out on Billy. They figured, okay, we've got our American kid now. We'll make an example. We're being tough on drug smugglers. So they sentenced him to life. That life sentence, had that never been imposed, Billy would have left prison after four years.
Yes.
He had already served 4 years and gone home, and no one would have ever heard of him.
No, that's right.
But because he got a life sentence, his lawyer back home was able to get a ton of publicity for his situation, and there was a lot of pressure being put on the Turkish government. And it was coming at them from both, you know, from everywhere. And the American ambassador to Turkey would spend his days trying to get Billy released and yet also push the U.S.'s anti-drug policy.
It was
a difficult time.
It was a very difficult time, and again, that comes out in the style of the images themselves, and of course, you bring in the terrorism of that day and that of the 70s and the PLO and what was going on there. I mean, that's I remember that as a kid. Some of those images,
me too.
And
that's
disturbing
what
stuff.
Changed airline flying.
Yes. Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And which, of course, Billy wasn't quite aware of, hence why he got busted.
Yes. Yes.
But yes, and the terrorism, and not only that, you know, you had, like you said, the drug war, you had the politics of the time.
It's the complexities, the paradox, this crazy, crazy, beautiful world that we live in. Can you tell us, we're going to have to wrap this up in a couple of minutes, but can you tell me how yoga plays into the film? I mean, almost right out of the gate, we're kind of introduced to this, and we don't quite know who we're watching at the time. But yeah, where does yoga play into Billy's?
Billy discovered yoga right before he was busted. A friend had given him a book, and he was teaching it to himself. He got busted with that book in his backpack. And that pursuit of yoga is what kept him sane in the 5 years of prison. And he would do it every day in prison, and he got the other inmates doing it, and he maintains that it's kept him sane. Until to this day, Billy's 70 years old. He looks fantastic. He's in great shape. He attributes to his yoga.
Yeah.
So yoga is very, very important in Billy's life.
Yeah, I so love that you bring that in at the beginning, and then that he actually comes out and says, you know, it pretty much saved my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, fascinating. I have to tell you, one of my favorite, I mean, I love the film, and there's so many different moments that stick with me, but I love that you tell the truth moments.
Funny?
Oh, it's hysterical, Sally. It's
well,
so
know,
funny.
Billy, but, you know, one thing we did capture, which is relevant to today's thing, you know, when you were talking about the natural born killers, the media circus. I mean, Billy was a criminal. He was a drug smuggler.
For sure. Yeah.
Yes, he pulled off an incredibly brilliant escape. But when he came home, he was a celebrity.
Yeah.
You know, he did the Today Show, To Tell the Truth, Tomorrow. I mean, he was everywhere.
He was everywhere. Yeah.
And he was really one of the first who became a celebrity for doing something criminal.
Right. We're back to irony and paradox.
Yeah. And then, of course, one fun irony we have in our film. When Billy was first busted, the original lockup in Istanbul was right in the heart of the city. that particular jail is now the Four Seasons Hotel.
Oh, yeah, which is just crazy.
Isn't that bizarre?
Oh, it's so bizarre. It's so bizarre. The memory, and then just talking about memory there, too, you know, and it's like this museum that's been turned into this five-star hotel.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
How
and
odd.
They have bars on some of
the... Bars still on some of the windows.
Yeah, so it was, you know, it worked, there was just a number of different funny ironies along the way.
Well, listen, again, congratulations. And,
oh,
and
David,
thanks,
thank you so
much
for having me.
Yeah, well, thank you for taking the time and you're stepping into a Q&A. And I just think it's a wonderful film about the power of our own stories, you know.
The power of film.
And the power of film, you know.
That the power of film to create an impression.
Yeah.
That can linger with an audience for decades to come. That's really what we're saying here.
Yeah, it's
is
wonderful.
That look at this film. See, it's bigger than Billy Hayes. It transcends him.
Yeah.
Because it's the power of this film. It almost doesn't matter what Billy says. The film
the truth doesn't matter anymore. In a way, right?
Correct. Yeah.
We've been talking with Sally Sussman about Midnight Return, her new film, Midnight Return, the story of Billy Hayes and Turkey. Good luck tonight with
Q&A. David, and just let everyone in the audience know that at the end of March, around March 16th, go on iTunes. The film will be available for purchase or rental. And then we're here in Toronto. We have another screening Friday night at 7 and then one at Sunday at 9.
Well, thanks so much for your time today, Sally.
Thanks
really
for having me. I really appreciate it. It was great talking to you, David.
Great chat.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.